It is truly good to be back with you this morning. So many familiar faces, so many wonderful changes. Life goes on. Phil Oakes was a folk singer and prolific songwriter of the 1960s and 70s, now best known for his passionate opposition to the war in Vietnam. Depressed and in despair at the state of our country, and perhaps feeling he hadn't achieved the musical success he had hoped for, he took his own life not long after the war, at the age of only 35. Can't go up much higher. After Phyllis and I left Baltimore, we did an interim ministry at Paint Branch, the congregation just down I-95 along the Washington Beltway. We did an auction sermon there, as we had here. And in that year, the couple who bought it were longtime Phil Oakes fans. Can you hear now, Doreen? Not very well. You could come up and sit up here, and then you wouldn't hear at all. They asked us to preach on a Phil Oakes song that's not about the war or politics, but which suggests an abiding preoccupation with the relationship between how we live and our mortality. So Scott sang several of those verses for us, and that inspired a sermon which we have given several times since then. Each time, of course, changed because life goes on. One verse which he did not sing is this one. Won't see the golden of the sun when I'm gone, and the evenings and the mornings will be one when I'm gone. Can't be singing louder than the guns when I'm gone, so I guess I'll have to do it while I'm here. I guess I'll have to do it while I'm here. Phil Oakes sings of lots of things that are important in his life, and he realizes he's going to have to do them while he's here. Some of them are pretty important to all of us, like enjoying the bracing air, the beauty all around us. Some are about the delight of the people in our lives, the sense of community. And he sings also of fighting the good fight for peace and justice. And in all this, just plain singing and laughing and loving. He could be speaking for me and maybe for you, for all of us. Now, though he doesn't name it, it seems to me there's also a larger dimension to a list like this. Some of these things we put on bucket lists and some things we take for granted. Some things we just don't think about until afterwards, when it's too late to do much different. It's about how we do these things, with our attitude toward life and others. It's about how we might enjoy these things now while we're healthy, and how in different ways we might also enjoy them even if we find ourselves invalids, in a nursing home, perhaps. We might even include on our lists this spiritual dimension of how we live, so that in good times and bad times alike, we practice fully becoming the kinds of people that we want to be. Now, I had never known anyone who had a serious stroke until one day last spring, when I got word that my cousin Judy, who lives alone in Massachusetts in the Berkshire Hills, had gone to the grocery store one morning and there collapsed of a stroke. She's never been able to come home Her left side was paralyzed. I was close to her. There were 15 of us, first cousins on that side of the family. She was the second. I'm the oldest. She never will see her home that she carefully built and dug out from the earth again, and now it's had to be sold to pay the claims of the state of Massachusetts, the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, for her care. But she retains the ability to think and to speak. She rails sometimes at God for what has happened to her. Sometimes she blames it on other people. Her judgment may be a little impaired, but she knows what's going on. And in the end, all of us, when mortality knocks at our door, have to find a way to change our life, to build a new life, if necessary, around the gifts that are left to us. She was the first one to have a stroke in my life, and the second that I learned about came the next day when David and our colleague, Diane Tyker, down at the Paint Branch Church, who had been is the settled minister there following that interim that Phyllis and I did, had a serious stroke, also leaving her paralyzed on her left side. Happily, Diane is younger. She has worked very hard at physical therapy. She's back home now. She's making steady improvement, and there's at least a possibility that she will be able to return to ministry. The next Sunday after her stroke, Phyllis and I were invited to fill her pulpit as the church scraped around for people who could fill in temporarily until they learned more about Diane's situation. We titled our sermon, In the Blink of an Eye. In the Blink of an Eye. That's how life is for all of us. It can change in the blink of an eye. I think most of us have seen it happen. I hope it has not happened to too many of us. But we've seen it and we know it can happen. For me, it was a heart attack, as some of you will remember, 7 years ago. That's what led Phyllis and me to retire from this pulpit so that you could find the steady ministry with adequate energy to provide some continuity that this church needs, every church needs. No one's immune. No one is immune, as you know all too well. Might be cancer. Might be a fall. Might be an auto accident or a stroke. Any of these things might happen to you or to a loved one. In the meantime, though, we are busy rushing off somewhere every day of our lives. Or we're rushing even standing still at home with all the things we have to do. There's an old teaching story about this that you might have heard me use at another time. It's from the Hasidic tradition of Eastern Europe. It's about the rabbi of Berdichev. He was walking in his village one day and he came across a friend who was rushing past. And he said to the friend, "Why are you rushing so?" The friend said, "Well, I'm pursuing my livelihood." And the rabbi said, "How do you know that your livelihood is out there so that you have to rush to catch up with it? Stand still, my friend. Stand still." For livelihood, read the main thing. You've heard us, I'm sure those of you who've been around a while have heard me talk about that many times. About the time we came to Baltimore 20 years ago, a local Methodist bishop, whose name I have never located, used to tell the story about the main thing. The main thing, he said, is to figure out the main thing. And then to keep the main thing, the main thing. That's the main thing. But But sometimes it takes a serious brush with our mortality to figure it out. Forrest Church, the longtime minister of All Souls Church in New York City, tells how his father, Frank Church, enrolled at Harvard Law School after he came out of military service in World War II. He made the law review in his first year. But that winter was an exceptionally hard winter in the Boston area. And his wife, then pregnant with Forrest, said she wasn't about to go through another New England winter in Boston. So Frank gave up the election to the law review, a distinguished, prestigious status for students starting in the law school, and transferred to Stanford Law School, where the weather was much more clement. But there, he learned that the worsening back pain that he felt was cancer. He was given 6 months to live. It so happened, though, that researchers at Stanford had developed an experimental new program of radiation therapy. So Frank signed up for that. He went to class in the mornings, studied in the afternoons, and was sick as a dog every night. But although he lost 125 pounds, the cancer was gone. Now, he probably would have died if he stayed in Boston, but he lived, and his brush with death changed his life, which continued for another 35 years. At the age of 32, then living in Idaho, he became the youngest U.S. senator. He played prominent roles in the passage of the Civil Rights Acts of 1957, 60, and 64. He co-sponsored the Nuclear Test Ban Treaty. He opposed the Vietnam War and was a leader in conservation legislation. Both Frank and his wife savored these bonus years. He lived as if each day might be his last. They took risks. They made time for life and for love and for public service. They lived fully and intentionally each additional day they received. Their son, Forrest, included the story in his last book, which some of you, I'm sure, have read, Love and Death, written after his own diagnosis of cancer, the cancer that took his life. He, too, discovered how it is that illness can concentrate the mind. All of us, at some point, must confront our mortality. We can't know what will happen to us or when, but it can help greatly to have thought long before it happens about what are the most important things in our lives. My own heart attack came 7 years ago. It caused a major change in my life. I was alone in the house when I began to feel a crushing pain in my chest, so oppressive that I felt I couldn't even get out of the chair for up to an hour. But I did manage eventually and called for help, and happily, physicians at Hopkins saved my life. And perhaps today, with exercise and diet, I'm even healthier than I was before. That remains to be seen. But Phyllis and I both began to think very hard about what is most important to us in the time that remains to us. I think we both knew that for us it was our children and grandchildren. We're so fortunate. 3 children, 6 grandchildren, all living close by, down around the Washington Beltway. We are so fortunate because for so many people, including many of you, I'm sure, your families are scattered across the country, even the world. And for some, there are no surviving family members. We found, though, that even 2 hours, well, it was not 2 hours, 4 hours away in Norfolk, where we were for a couple of years after Paint Branch, was too far for us to get back often enough for the school events, family events, things we realized when we were far enough away that we wanted to be there for. So we came back to this area. Family, for us, was the main thing. But how might we visualize the main thing in our lives in a way that would make sense for us even if we were confined to a wheelchair, a nursing home? I'm thinking, for example, of nurturing our close relationships as a main thing so that we could still find meaning in pursuing them even if we were no longer so active in life. Maybe we could pursue them in a conversation, in a letter, even just in a smile when we're flat on our back. I think the people in our lives long for a sense that we know and care about them, what in religious language I call a blessing. In recent years, I've begun to think every day about the blessings I've received in my life, those I enjoy today. I still enjoy all the ones I've received in the past. Some people might just speak of luck, and I have been lucky, very lucky. But blessing is a special way of looking at luck. For luck implies chance, and blessing comes with intention, attitude, even if it's implicit. When we see it as blessing, we experience it as more than luck. It comes to us as a gift we can give whether we are in the prime of life or in life's later years. Even in a nursing home, we can bless. Coming to appreciate my blessings and to see them more and more as I reflect on my life, my bucket list now includes taking more seriously the chance I have in every relationship to offer my own blessing to family and to friends, to everyone I meet. And more than that, trying to live with an attitude of blessing. Just this week, I was sorting through a carton of old papers. I've been postponing that as long as I could. We have a house over in Essex. We've rented it out for the last several years. But last year we decided we're going to rent it out as a single unit, not furnished. We moved everything out, and then there were all those boxes that had piled up in the garage. It's a big garage. It was full. It took a long time. We gave away a lot to family. We took a lot to Goodwill and other places. We went to the dumpster a number of times. But at the end, there were those boxes. You know about those boxes that we knew would involve hard decisions, and besides, just going through them might be too emotional. So we brought them back to our little apartment in Frederick, where the still, a lot of them are stashed in corners, closets. Well, I took one of them. I had no more excuses. We're thinking about moving to a retirement community next year where we may have even less space. I threw out quite a few things in that carton. I put some in my file cabinet, gave away some, and one thing that caught my eye was a small file folder with a handwritten letter from my grandfather, for whom I am named. Now, he has been gone for more than 50 years. He died while I was in college. But while I was in college for a required course in religion, I wrote a paper on the letters of Paul, probably the letters of Paul to the church at Corinth, I don't remember. My father, seeing it later at home, sent it to my grandfather. My grandfather marked on it, "John will make a fine minister." Now, he sent it back to my father. But he wrote this letter to me, and he said, "I profited much by it, and thank you heartily for the loan. It is an essay which would do credit to anyone in a theological seminary. May you go on in that study to the pulpit, which you will surely grace." Well, it took me another 30 years to find the call and the confidence I would need to do this. But I've always had a deep sense of following in his footsteps, an awareness which has only grown over the years since I finally began to do so. We all have these chances to bless. More and more, I've come to appreciate the blessing I feel from all the wonderful teachers in my life, from kindergarten to seminary and on, from family members and friends, the blessing of the people I've served in ministry, most certainly including you folks in this congregation. I've come to appreciate the blessing of authors whom I've read, especially those whose stories have stirred my heart. Some of you are teachers and other caregivers. After you've been around a while, you begin to hear from former students. Only a few, perhaps, but enough to let you know that you've made a difference. You've almost certainly made a difference in many, many more lives than you ever hear from. As I began my first ministry in Canada, 25 years ago now, I was at a church conference with people from a number of congregations, and one of them, noticing my name tag, said, "Are you related to Elizabeth Manuel?" I said, "Yes, she was my mother." "Ah," she said, "I took a course with her at Syracuse University, and I did some mental calculating. This was before I was born. It made such a difference in my life that she remembered it after 60 years. 60 years. But still she remembered, as I remember my kindergarten teachers, Miss Clough and Miss Baird, and Jim Logan, a wonderful seminary professor, and many, many others who trusted and encouraged me. Now, if you're grandparents, and I suspect more than a few are, your grandkids may not be able to articulate at this age the blessings you've given them. They may not be able to do that until after you are gone. But I think you can take it on faith. All grandparents make a difference. All parents make a difference. The only question is, what kind of a difference? And perhaps that's the point of our whole lives, the meta-story behind the Phil Oakes song. How do we want to live in our lives in light of how we'd like to be remembered when we're gone? And in light, perhaps, of how we remember those who have given such wonderful gifts to us on our way, on our journey. Today is the only day we can be sure of. Knowing that, the colors are brighter, music more poignant, love sweeter, justice more urgent. Those of you who have survived a serious bout with illness, with our human mortality, know this. Those of you who are facing it now know this. And knowing it, we understand that this is the day. We must watch that sunset, play with our children and grandchildren, witness to justice. Phil Oakes writes, "Can't live proud enough to die when I'm gone, so I guess I'll have to do it while I'm here." Let us say yes to life this day, living it proudly and fully and with love. As we do so, may we be a blessing in all we are and all we do. May it be so. May we be a blessing. May we be in a spirit of prayer. Eternal presence, Spirit of life, gracious and loving God, whom we call by many names, sometimes none at all, in the quiet of this hour and in the silent places of our hearts, help us to feel your abiding presence. Stir our memories of those times when we have met you over the years, those liminal times and thin places where we have felt a deep sense of your presence in our own hearts and in each other's, and in the skies over our heads and in the beauty of all the world around us. Remind us of those times when, in our fear and in our grief, we have felt your strength, your love. When, in our uncertainty, we have felt your vision emerging more clearly and the clouds around us lifting. And once again, open our eyes to see the blessings which have come to us in so many things, small and large, from our families and our friends, from our teachers and so many others, even seemingly from life itself. Someone has said these blessings are like a little cluster of airplanes, little airplanes, circling around us, waiting to land as we acknowledge them and nod them in. As we open our eyes to these blessings surrounding us while we live, remind us not only of the main things in our lives, but also of the chance we have in the way that we pursue them to bless those all around us, that even when we're gone, we'll continue to live. In the silence, may we remember. May it be so. Amen. And blessed be.
Gathered Baltimore, people who glean food, vegetables, and fruit and bread. As we come back from deep contemplation, you might want to start moving your hands and feet a little bit and move that into the middle of your body to kind of anchor that here today. Because we're hoping to send you out into the world as the Unitarian, First Unitarian Church of Baltimore, as the spiritual home of a diverse and mutually supportive community, building on its deep historical roots, raising a beacon of liberal religion, social justice, and hope in Baltimore and in the world. Hello, and my name is Alice Lim, and I am happy to serve on the Board of Trustees for the Church. Welcome to all of you, and a special welcome to the people who are visitors. If you would like to, we would like to know who you are, so if you stand up and tell us your name and where you're from, the usher will bring you a microphone so that you can be heard. If you don't want to stand up, we welcome you. So that means what our volunteers contribute, it means would be a subcommittee that handles a well-oiled pledge campaign. So there's a hotline there. We're looking for creative ideas. It's just a hotline that needs to be fleshed out. And also, this is not just a one-way street. Learning how to do this effectively could be experience that would contribute to a career, to a highly desired hobby that would be in great demand. And people wouldn't be alone. There are members of the congregation who have expertise in these areas who are willing to consult and to advise. There are a lot of really great ideas out there. And we can send interested people out for training and for workshops so that they can learn more about how to do this sort of thing. And also gives you a chance to connect with our whole community at whatever level you want to, because there's different amounts of commitment and a landscape of colleagues. So if you would like to join a truly creative group, I will be down near the welcome table with a sign-up sheet and an outline of the outline that we have. And please come and talk to me about it, and we'll get a meeting set up. We need a few good people. Let's get together and do it joyfully. And now back to the regular sort of community announcement. Today, if you were thinking about wanting to go to brunch after church, the city dining card deck includes $10 off on your meal at such places as Dunkin' Donuts, the Big Bun, or City Cafe. They're all within walking distance of the church. For $20, you get 50 playing cards, and each one of the cards gives you a $10 discount on a meal at one of the restaurants that's on the card, at locally owned restaurants. And stop by the bookstore during the fellowship hour and pick up a deck. Or you can call the church office. He's heading up the bookstore. I know the bookstore. Every deck you buy supports the church as well as the local businesses. Next week, in the tradition of Christian Unitarian Universalism, we will celebrate the Lord's Supper using a liturgy from the 1937, some of us remember this. He read the hymnal, Hymns of the Spirit, Services of Religion for the Use in Churches of the Free Spirit Unitarian Universalist. We will have quiet music, prayers, and the sharing of bread and fruit of the vine on All Souls Day in the front rows of the sanctuary. That will be Sunday, November 2nd at 5 p.m. And the week after, on Saturday, November 8th, Emma's Revolution will have a concert here at 8 o'clock. It will be award-winning activist songwriters, Love Reaches Out. It's a benefit concert for the Unitarian Universalist Legislative Ministry of Maryland, which lobbies for stuff that we really want if we're doing liberal religious values and social justice of the tickets are available at coffee hour. See James Markovich. Reserve Sunday after church, November 9th, from 1 to 2:30 p.m. Your Board of Trustees wants to hear from you. We will be doing a listening on the open question of our financial situation. As most of you know, back in June, when we had our annual meeting, the congregation voted to shift the ministry to three-quarter time for this year, pending a review in December of how we felt about that, the financial situation and other considerations. The board wants your input on how you feel about this. So we will record and summarize your views that are expressed at the meeting. We'll make them available to the congregation and to the board. And board members will be on hand afterwards if you have
Glory. happiness, and every tomorrow a vision of hope. Look well, therefore, to this day. Amen. Blessed be.
Our closing hymn is number 6 in the grade.